Hare Krishna. Is there a total of how many books were distributed?
Yeah, 35,000 small books and 26,400 Mahabig books, just the Brahmacharis. That's all. The congregation is yet to get the books in return, so by this Sunday we'll come to know the final score.
Of the Mahabig books, how many parties were? Brahmacharis. Which places?
One was in Punjab, Pathankot and Firozpur. And one went to north of Delhi, that's at Rudrapur. And one party went to Chennai. And one was in Maharashtra, near Amravati, Yavatmal, please. That place.
Who decides which place?
We generally, for the BT, Brahmachari trainees, we send them in Maharashtra only, and the two bus parties, they decide their own places. So this time Jagannathpur decided for Chennai, and Rajgovindpur, he decided for Pantnagar. So because they are regularly going for the bus parties, so they know all the fertile places which are good for book distribution, they choose that place for marathon. That is a...
BT devotees.
So we have one and two devotees from Punjab, so they decided to take this time to Punjab. Otherwise, we always have both the BTs in Maharashtra only. But because one or two devotees from Punjab, so they thought we'll go to our own homeland and we'll distribute. So that was it. Now, the overall score, the BT bus party which went to Pathankot and Firozpur in Punjab, they distributed 7,500 Mahabig books. That is one-to-one. That means they gave books and they got money also immediately. Yes, that's one-to-one books. Yeah, and they also went to Husseinwala border. That's in Firozpur. And they gave books to the jawans, the soldiers there. And they told that our spiritual master came from this place. So so we want to give a gift to all the jawans here. two jawans.
How many books there?
In border, on the border? Pathankot?
No, border.
On the border, when they went to distribute books, they were not allowed to take the books on the border because of certain restrictions. So somehow they took just two books and then they distributed that two books to...
Even I was not allowed there. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada. He said, in order to preach, we must be enthusiastic. Enthusiasm is life. And Srila Prabhupada himself considered our enthusiasm very much our success. Because to put our heart into something, means to be enthusiastic to do it. And what I heard in Chennai, December 31st, we will be here and we will do everything we can, whatever the results. And the commitment to that enthusiasm is in itself the result. This is Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gives the philosophy to Arjuna, and on the basis of that philosophy, tells Arjuna to fight, to perform his duty with enthusiasm. And what is the enthusiasm? Enthusiasm to please Krishna. What does Krishna want? Krishna sees every living being as his own devotee. Some are forgetful to various levels and some are remembering. And as devotees, we have been called by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by our previous acharyas and by Srila Prabhupada to remind people of their eternal constitutional nature, to remind people where their real happiness actually is. And Srila Prabhupada has given us ways in which we can specifically awaken people's Krishna consciousness. And just as Arjuna followed Krishna's instruction with incredible amount of enthusiasm, using the entirety of his intelligence, his abilities, his time, his everything. In the same way, in whatever service we're performing, in devotional service, this is how we put our heart into. Brahmachari life is especially designed for the purpose of sacrificing everything else for a higher cause. The higher cause of pleasing Krishna and helping others to learn the art of pleasing Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, more than anything else at any time, as far as services, he emphasized how pleased he was by distributing his books. Srila Prabhupada was pleased in so many efforts, and he designed so many projects. And when he went to those projects, he expressed the utmost importance of that particular form of devotional service. Sometimes it was agriculture and cow protection. When he would go to the farm communities, he would make us feel that was the most important thing. When he was with BI, Bhaktivedanta Institute, to those devotees, he would speak that transforming the scientists, that is my mission. That is why I came to this world. Very much emphasized that, encouraged education to children, gurukuls. Sometimes he would tell the pujaris, you are the most fortunate person in the whole world because you are so close to Krishna. So Prabhupada would make every devotee feel so important. Prabhupada would make every devotee feel that his or her service was most valuable. In this way, he enthused the devotees. That whatever they were doing, they understood this was really pleasing my guru. This is extremely important to him. So let me put my heart and soul into it. Let me put aside everything and anything that is in the way of this. Those who are lecturing in colleges, and cultivating the youth in that sense, he gave them that sort of encouragement also. But in most temples, in most places, what Srila Prabhupada would emphasize most was book distribution. And we could understand the reason from various perspectives. One is at the holiest of all holy places, Radha Kund. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur personally told Prabhupada, if you get money, print and distribute books. Srila Prabhupada also received the message from Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that you should go to the Western world and spread Krishna consciousness in the English language. And Prabhupada began mainly with Nam Sankirtan. At the beginning, that was his main emphasis. Going into the streets and chanting. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu especially gave a lot of emphasis to that. And he personally went out and played his little bongo drum and chanted. And in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, most every temple, all day long, devotees would just do Nam Sankirtan in the streets all day. Then back to Godhead came. And that became a very much a part of the Nam Sankirtan. They would chant and dance in the streets and give out back to Godhead. He had everyone doing. They started a Sunday feast program. That was a program where people would actually come to the centers, little storefronts, little temples. They would actually hear Krishna consciousness, philosophy. They would dance and chant with devotees. They would take prasad. They would make friends. So little by little, Prabhupada was instituting so many various ways by which we could reach so many various people. And Prabhupada gave so much value to every one of those efforts. That was all based on that simple instruction of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Go to the West and give Lord Chaitanya's teachings. But what Srila Prabhupada did is he actually took the way all the previous acharyas were, Harinam Kirtan was always there in our sampradaya. Speaking to scholars who are like the scientists of today was always there. Writing books, distributing books, Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Shamananda, under Jiva Goswami's guidance. So Prabhupada really took the tradition of our acharyas and taught all these new devotees all these branches of spreading Krishna consciousness that have always been through drama. There was a drama troupe that used to travel around ISKCON. Later on, it became based in New York City. It was called the Vaikuntha Players. They had an entire auditorium in their temple on 55th Street. It was a skyscraper building that we once had. One floor was a temple, one floor was a restaurant, one floor, large room, was an auditorium for theater. And they had a full-time theater troupe. And they were not just doing these kind of plays like Radha Gopinath does in the temple room during festivals. Devotionally, though, your plays are not... No one can be better than those plays because they're full of pure devotion. But he had people who... devotees... who were actually professional actors. There were quite a few devotees who were professional actors before they came to Krishna consciousness. And they were super excellent. They could act with such emotion and such skill. They make you laugh, they make you cry. Kind of like you. Except they spoke English. And dancers, professional dancers. And they would perform like 1.5 hour dramas every Sunday. Different ones. And mesmerize people. Prabhupada, he wanted to encourage them. That's why they took it so seriously. That's why they wrote these scripts and built it so well. Because Prabhupada told them, he said, this dramatic performances of Krishna consciousness, there's no better way of spreading our movement. He said, I want all the Vaikuntha players to travel with me wherever I go in the world and perform these dramas to spread Krishna consciousness. He said, when people, when they see these dramas, they not only reading my books, they are living and experiencing my books. So this is how he enthused everyone. And everyone felt so important, so valued. And sometimes neophyte devotees would fight about whose is better. But from Prabhupada's perspective, like Krishna, he was seeing every gopi and every cowherd boy and appreciating them. And Prabhupada wanted us to appreciate what others were doing as he was appreciating what others were doing. But still, the basis of every different type of service that I've been talking about, whether it's scientific preaching or college preaching or dramatic preaching or farm community preaching or retreat center preaching or whether it's Gurukul preaching, they're all based on his books. He said books were the basis of everything. The foundation. And at Radha Kund, in that holiest of all holy places, Prabhupada was specifically given this instruction by his guru. If ever you get money, print and distribute books. And Prabhupada took that so seriously. When he was in Radha Damodar temple for 6 years preparing for his journey to the West to spread this great mission all over the world, he spent the majority of his time translating and writing commentaries to the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Before that, back to Godhead. He was writing, he was editing, he was managing, proofreading, he was getting the paper, he was bringing it to the printer, he was printing, he was having the printer print it, he was taking loans for it personally, and then he was the distributor. It was his leela. And when he came to the West and books began to be distributed, which was a couple years later, actually, that was the, there were specific services that people had and that I was talking about, but the universal service for our whole movement was book distribution. And what enthused devotees so much is how they would see, but probably 95% of the ISKCON devotee were seeing through their ears, as Prabhupada taught us. Seeing through our eyes is a very limited experience, but seeing through our ears. Because not that many devotees got to have personal time with Srila Prabhupada. And if they did, almost everybody, their only personal time with Prabhupada was sitting with him in a class. Rarely could anyone speak to him directly. After, by 1972, that's the way it was. Unless you were in the inner circle of his traveling team, or unless you were a temple president, or a GBC. But we all heard how he would rise at 12 o'clock and spend hours every night translating and giving his purports. In the early, early days, he had a little typewriter. And then one of his disciples brought him a dictaphone, quite heavy. About this big, with a wire, this curly wire that goes, and then a microphone about this big, and you have to press a button like, and he, and the tapes would be going. There would be tapes here, and they'd be going like that. And the secretary would carry around that dictaphone everywhere and put it on Prabhupada's desk. Prabhupada would be giving the word-for-word transliterations. He would give his translation. And he would he had a big book that he carried with him wherever he went with the primary commentaries throughout history of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Commentaries of Sridhar Swami and commentaries of Sanatan Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, many. He would read all the commentaries for each verse, and he'd digest them all. And then he would give his commentary, dictated. Prabhupada said these purports was his devotional ecstasies. Where nobody was ever there around except in the last days in Vrindavan when we see either Prajumana or Jayadvaita Swami or Tamal Krishna Goswami would hold the dictaphone to his mouth because he couldn't any longer do. But for all the years he was always in the hours and hours and hours every night. It was just him and his guru and the previous acharyas and Krishna as he would be giving his books. So devotees knew that. That's something he did every single day without fail. Wherever he was traveling, however many meetings, however many lectures, however many he would always give those hours for his books. And he gave us Bhagavad Gita. He gave us 9 full cantos and several of the 10th canto. He gave us Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna book, Ishopanishad, Nectar of Devotion. And the smaller books that were coming out were basically transcriptions from recordings of his lectures, which he was giving wherever he was going. He was giving lectures. So devotees were willing to risk their lives, even if they hardly, even devotees who never even got to personally, physically see Prabhupada. And there are many of such devotees too who are his disciples. But just knowing how much he put his heart into these books and knowing how much he wanted us to help him to share his message, to share his love, his surrender, his devotion to his guru with the world. Srila Prabhupada was so deeply grateful when devotees had enthusiasm to distribute the books. And one of the things he was so grateful for was the risks that people took to distribute the books. Because in the Western world, practically nowhere was it even legal. We've heard stories about the Soviet Union, where many of you here, when Brahmananda Prabhu told some stories about distributing books in Russia, they never even met Prabhupada. Before they became devotees, Prabhupada already had left the world. I was just with Brahmananda Prabhu in September of the last year in Ukraine. It was interesting because during the Ukraine festival, one lady was there, special guest. Her name is Mandakini Devi Dasi. Srila Prabhupada went to Russia in 1971 with Shamsundar Prabhu and Aravind Prabhu. And during that time, Shamsundar Prabhu on the street met this boy. And he was a Russian boy along with an Indian, and brought him up, and this boy took interest. Prabhupada spent 3 days giving him everything he needed to know to spread Krishna consciousness during the Soviet Union communist time. Now this is really dangerous. I was born and raised in America. I was born and raised to fear the Russians, because we knew they had nuclear bombs and they had a bigger army than ours, and we were enemies. And they were the two superpowers of the world. And religion was outlawed unless it was state controlled. And the devotees, Prabhupada went, and this boy, Prabhupada initiated him, Ananta Shanti. And he said, "I need a partner. If I'm going to spread this Krishna consciousness movement in Russia, I need a partner." And there was no brahmachari ashram there because he was the only devotee. So it was obvious that it would be better if he got married. But he needed to marry a devotee. And Prabhupada was leaving that day. He had no time to find a girl to make a devotee. His visa was finished. So Prabhupada flew to Paris. And this girl, just a young girl in her early 20s, Mandakini, maybe 20 years old, he said, "Well, are you willing to go to Russia and marry Ananta Shanti?" You know what that means? It's not like taking a vacation. It means this young French girl going to Russia, the most dangerous place in the world, the biggest armies. Our religion is not legal. Everything has to be underground. She said, "If it pleases you, Prabhupada, I'll go." She went. And the two of them began the underground Hare Krishna movement. And how did they do it? They started printing Prabhupada's Bhagavad. They started printing Prabhupada's books. So in Ukraine this year, during this festival, there was quite amazing as far as a yatra. 12,000 devotees came. And it was free for everyone. No price. Because they don't want money to be the object that could either qualify you or not qualify you for this annual yatra. It's a 1 week yatra. They rent out big grounds and everything. And their kitchens, our kitchens and our yatras, they're cooking for about two or three times more people. And they've used their creativeness just like we use ours. It's hard to compare. I think they could learn from us and we could learn from them. That's the way we should have relations with each other. We have our pulleys that pick up the pots and little kids are going, and 1,000 liters are being picked up. They have these incredible, unbelievable facilities that they've created there. I mean, we really should see some of them. They make bread for 12,000 people every day. These little bread rolls. And they have to make like two or three for each person. And it's on time. And they have a store where you could buy all kinds of stuff. But the store is free. Food is free. Accommodation is free. Seminars are free. Everything's free. And the store is free. But they have recommended prices. Is this interesting to all of you? I'm going to get to the purpose of why I'm saying it. This is going to culminate in a very moving narration. But those who have money, they're asked to give as much as they can for a donation without pressure. Those who don't have that much money, you know, just by their own conscience, they give what they can give. 12,000 people. If you don't have any money, it's free. If you have a little, you just pay what you can. If you have a lot, you pay whatever you want. They make huge profit every year. They have large surplus of funds every year. Because really, devotees really, when they see that we are doing something that's so magnanimous without excluding anyone, it's amazing how people are generous. And a large portion of them don't even pay anything. But they're honest people. If they have something, they do. and they're inspired. So anyways, during this Mandakini Devi, this girl, if she did not, and believe me, she took such risk. She suffered so much when she was trying to spread Krishna consciousness. She didn't know a word of Russian. She knew a little English. She was French. And there she was. She knew English, actually, but with a heavy French accent. And her and Ananda Shanti, believe me, there was no astrological calculation to see their compatibility because they were not compatible. But Prabhupada was willing to take that risk with somebody he loved so dearly as his own disciple daughter for this mission. And she was willing to take the risk. And they were underground together. And after a few years, it just became so bad, she wasn't allowed to stay in the country anymore, and she wasn't allowed back. But by that time, the seed was planted, and it was already growing. So Mandakini Devi wanted the old devotees. Now they're all after Prabhupada, because Ananta Shanti was the only devotee in Russia during Prabhupada's time. And he passed away last year. Let's pray for him. Thank his eternal soul for what he did for Prabhupada. So many times he was put in prison. But because he wouldn't stop preaching and distributing books, they were giving steeper and steeper sentences to him. And ultimately, they put him in a mental hospital where they were torturing him with drugs that are specially meant to destroy your brain. Freezing cold with no heat in the Siberian winters. I mean, they really tortured. And he'd come out and start preaching again. He didn't know what to do with these devotees. But Mandakini wanted those devotees who were leaders and preachers during the communist regime, whoever was still there, who was at that festival, to have a lunch together. And she invited Bhakti Vigyan Goswami, who was one of those people, and myself. And they were telling stories. I can't remember all of them, but they were incredible. And almost everyone was around book distribution. The risks that they took. Unbelievable. Most of the people there spent time being tortured in prisons. Brahmananda was there. He was the one who was printing the books. You all know what happens in a beehive. Is the person in charge of the beehives at our eco-village here now? He's not here. Anyways, we have beehives. But how many of you know something about culture of bees in a beehive? Raise your hand. Well, there's a queen bee, and she's right in the middle of the hive. And the duty of there's all kinds of other bees. There's certain bees in a certain inner chambers of the hive, and they're like the ones who reproduce other bees. And then there's like more the administration bees. And then there's the working bees that go out and get the pollen and come back and bring it to the hive. But every single bee is focused on protecting the queen bee. If the queen bee leaves the hive, everyone leaves the hive. I'm not going to mention names, but there's a family who are one of the wealthiest families in all of India. And I recently, just this year, last year, I was invited to one of their retreat homes, beautiful home, big property. And they put a huge amount of effort into beehives to make pure, natural, organic honey. And after the first year, the queen bee left the hive. So every bee left the hive. So no matter how much money they put into it, they can't get a drop of honey because they can't keep the bees because the queen won't stay there. So this is the culture of the queen, the bees. They're all really devoted to the queen. So because Prabhupada's mission in Russia was very much based around underground book distribution, that's really what was spreading this movement. Outside of India, there's more devotees in Russia and Ukraine than anywhere else on the planet, by far. And it was, during communist time, it was spreading like wildfire underground. And the communist government considered it one of the greatest threats to their regime was the Hare Krishna movement. They had KGBs and spies everywhere trying to find. And who was the queen bee? The person printing the books. In his basement. Brahmananda, in his basement, was printing the books by the thousands and thousands and thousands, with a few devotees just helping him. And how he did it, incredible stories. At the beginning, he was actually using somebody else's printing press at night. And they didn't even know it. The owner of the printing press didn't know. He told a story when he was here. He met a girl who was working for the printing press and offered to buy her a nice car and jewelry and clothes, because during Russian time, nobody was rich. Everything was very poor. But, you know, it was relatively divided. So nobody was too poor, but everyone was kind of poor. But very rare for anybody to become rich. The government wouldn't allow. So she was getting all these things, and all she had to do, because she worked in the printing press, she had the key. After everybody left work, she would open it up, and they'd go in there and print books, Prabhupada's books, Bhagavad Gita, and all these other books. And then they'd have to, like, clean up everything before the workers came in the morning, and the owner, before the owner came in the morning, and make everything look exactly as it did before. And that's how they were distributing books. But after some time, they got enough means by which he could put a press in his basement. And the interesting thing is 99% of every devotee in Russia didn't know he was the one who was printing the books. Because the Russian government, the KGB, more than anybody else, they wanted to find the person who was printing them. And sometimes they would emotionally and in other torture and imprison, and they'd let them out of prison if they just told, who's printing the books, where? But those who knew would never tell. Even people who knew were willing to be tortured, Siberia, their brains destroyed, they wouldn't tell. That's how much they had faith in Prabhupada's books. And for the vast majority of others, They didn't know. He was doing all this service and getting no glory and no credit from anybody because nobody was allowed to know what he was doing. Only a few people knew. And all those few people practically got arrested and put in jail and they wouldn't tell. And this man had a wife and children. He wasn't a brahmachari. He was taking serious risk. He would have been killed. He wouldn't have not just been put in jail. He would have been killed. So during that lunch in Ukraine, he told a couple stories, and I'd like to tell one. There were two ladies. Now, none of these people are Prabhupada's disciples. They're all the disciples of his disciples. Because Prabhupada had already passed away before any of them actually connected. But the books were there. There were two ladies who were devotees. And they were helping Brahmananda in the printing of the books. It was in the basement of his house. And one day, somehow the KGB, you know, they're always probably the topmost intelligence agency in the world. You know, there's the CIA, the CID, the KGB. You know, they're constantly just underground getting tips and leads, and they have informants, and they disguise themselves to get information. Somehow they got some information to go to where the house was. And Brahmananda was there. And they actually were about to arrest Brahmananda and go into his house. And if they were to arrest him and go in the house and find the press, Brahmananda would be killed, the press would be taken, there'd be no books anymore in Russia. There were several big KGB men armed with guns, weapons, very huge guys, very official. And they came actually to arrest Brahmananda and go in. These two Matajis, not big, not strong, just girls, devotees, when they saw what was about to happen, they screamed and jumped on the KGB men. Jumped on them and started beating them up. These men have guns. And there's several of them. They couldn't believe what these girls are doing. This is serious stuff. You know, they just... Girls are dead. It's that easy. But they jumped on them and started, like, wouldn't let them. And while they jumped on him and everything, and it created such a fuss, Brahmananda ran away. And they were so shocked. I think they arrested the girls and put them in jail or something. But, you know, ultimately they got out. But the book distribution continued because they didn't catch Brahmananda, who was like the queen bee. And they didn't find the press. And for years after that, the books kept coming. And as Brahmananda was telling the story, he was weeping. His lips were trembling, and he was weeping as he was narrating this. I wish I could. I'll try to get the details even better for you next time we meet. But I was weeping and my lips were trembling. Everybody in the room was weeping, and especially these men and women who were there at the time, they knew what the fear was 24 hours a day, hearing about these girls willing to die, willing to be put in prison and tortured for the rest of their lives. The KGB wasn't looking for them. If they would have caught Brahmananda, they wouldn't have even said a word to the girls. They put their lives on the line because they had that much faith in Srila Prabhupada's books and how it could change people's hearts. Brahmananda said the KGB were just so shocked by these girls. They just forgot what they even came for. They just kind of took the girls away and left. And how many people in the world even know the names of these girls? He told me, but I don't even remember. Nobody knows. Whether anybody ever will know. They obviously didn't do it for name or fame. These are some of the unsung heroes. In fact, Brahmananda said just last year one of those ladies died. She passed away. But he saved her. She saved his life, and she saved the life of our society as we know it in Russia. And in America in those days, most of the book distributors, you know, at airports, they were regularly getting beaten up, women being harassed, men being beaten by the people who worked at the airport because they didn't want us there, and constantly fighting court cases to try to stay in there. And they would be in parking lots where it was illegal. Those old book distributions, the book distributors in America, if you talk to them, most of them spent time in jail. They were willing to risk everything. Why? And much of the biggest book distribution during Christmas time was in the north, where it's this much snow, and it's massive icy winds, and it's by Celsius 6, 7, 8 degrees below zero day and night during the day. Every day. And they're just in parking lots outside 12 hours a day. That's what book distribution was. Why? Why did they do it? Because they had heard Prabhupada would spend hours every night putting his heart and soul and his compassion into these translations, and how much he wanted these books to be printed, and how much he wanted these books to be distributed. Some of them had association with Prabhupada, the vast majority, at the most, in a class once every couple years. But this was their faith, and this was their enthusiasm. And many of those people, you know, they're old now, they're in their 60s. And when they think back of those days, the best years of their life, many of them, most of them, the most austere, the most dangerous, even those devotees in Russia that I was talking to, the ones who were in prison and everything else, and around that table that day, the best years of their life. Because they felt that they were doing something so valuable. They were paying such a high price in their own life to do something that was so valuable. Because they were so enthused by Prabhupada and by those who are enthused by Srila Prabhupada. So when I hear these beautiful stories, compared to all this stuff, Blackwater's not all that bad. But still, it's good for the show. But whether we take little hardship or big hardship, that's not the question. Even if everything goes our way, we still get the same credit. The real question is, are we willing, with enthusiasm, to spread this great mission? And if there's obstacles, whether it's Blackwater or KGBs, we'll do it. And whatever the religion of the person who's the supervisor of the company, if he gives us permission and makes everything nice, then we'll do it. But just to see your enthusiasm. Don't think that you have any less opportunity to please Prabhupada and please Krishna than those devotees in Russia or those devotees in America or those original people who were around Prabhupada. Understand that if we're just enthusiastic and willing to endure the risks and endure the inconveniences, whether they're great or whether they're small, we get the same blessings. We give the same amount of pleasure. And all of you have given so much of your hearts, your energy, and your enthusiasm, and your devotion for this wonderful purpose. I'm very proud of you. I'm very grateful to you. Because my own personal life, I'm not much of anything. During Prabhupada's time, I was like on the fourth or fifth level down in the hierarchy of ISKCON. I was, during Prabhupada's time in India, I wasn't even in ISKCON. I was just a sadhu who just loved Prabhupada. I wasn't a part, I didn't even know what his institution was until I came to the West. He didn't have any temples that I had. I think he had one in Calcutta, but I didn't go there at that time and see it. And I just, during Prabhupada's life, I was taking care of cows and worshipping the deities on a mountain in an isolated place under the president of that little ashram, who was under the supervisor, who was under the president of the community, who was under the leader of the community. So I was in a distant place. So I can't claim to be an intimate associate in that regard. But one thing I do know is Srila Prabhupada opened his heart and opened this movement in such a way that every single one of us can be an intimate associate by taking his orders as our life and soul, by taking his mission as our mission, by putting aside all of our ulterior conditionings and ulterior motives and actually trying to please him. That's something that everyone could do. And in this way, everyone, however easy or difficult, could be equally intimate in the inner circle of Prabhupada's heart. And that means the devotees who take this spirit, even in the future generations of our society. But we're just trying to please Prabhupada. We all have our tendencies, our natures, our upbringings. We all have our whatever may be within us. But what does Prabhupada want? And whatever we're doing here at Radha Gopinath Temple, Pune Temple, Nigri Temple, Belgaum Temple, Nasik Temple, all these other projects, Nanded, Aurangabad, where else? Amarvati, Paramvati, Goa. Wherever, you know, Radha Gopinath Temple has tried to extend their services to Krishna and to humanity, our ego village, it's just to somehow or other try to fulfill what Prabhupada wanted us to do. Prabhupada loved dramas, so we have, that's why we have our drama festival. That's all. Because he knew how it could inspire devotees and spread our movement. And I'd love to see a drama troupe. We were in Pune and we saw that Tukaram drama. And that was super excellent. Because it was in Marathi and it was so loud and they put my seat right in front of the speaker. Vrindavan Prabhu was shouting the translation in my ear, but I couldn't hear a word of it. But from whatever Govinda Prabhu told me of the story before, I understood some things. But dramas thousands of people came. And I think Rupa Raghunath Prabhu, you know, he has dramas of Tukaram Leelas, and they go village to village to village, and they perform these dramas, and they get hundreds of people. Hundreds, yes? Sanat Kumar Prabhu, you're very much a part of that. He's a grassroots village preacher, Sanat Kumar. And so many people are coming because drama is such a medium. And they're having Sankirtan. And they're given Pravachan Katas. And they're having cultural experiences. And they're helping people to understand the simple living, high thinking. You know, we're trying to integrate that with helping people understand cow protection and natural agriculture and water harvesting. These are all things that Srila Prabhupada told us are part of the Vedic culture, and if understood and presented properly, can spread our movement like anything. Prabhupada ordered, he wanted retreat centers that are replicas of Vrindavan. So Sanat Kumar Prabhu, Gauranga Prabhu, Vasudeva Prabhu are building. This is not our idea. This is Prabhupada's idea. Prabhupada wanted, he would say, I want Jamuna, I want Madan Mohan, I want Govindadi, I want Radha Shyam Sundar, I want Radha Raman, I want Govardhan. Name a mountain after Govardhan. Let people from all over the world come and experience Vrindavan, but they'll experience the way we want them to see it, without all the commercialism and other types of, you know, mixed philosophies. So Prabhupada wanted so many things. But the basis and the universal principle was always book distribution. So I'm so grateful that so many projects are coming up. Prabhupada established so many temples. Prabhupada established so much deity worship. So Radha Gopinath, all their dresses and all their garlands and all of their, and the, all the beauty that we've tried to create in their home, their temple, it's just to please Prabhupada. Just to try to assist him. And all the college preaching and the brahmachari ashram and the congregational development, it's just to try to assist Prabhupada. And we're all, it's not a matter of what our position, it's a matter of what is our enthusiasm. What is our enthusiasm and how are we actually willing to maintain that enthusiasm with proper philosophical intelligence to carry on even in the face of obstacles, whether it's being tortured or having to bathe with black water, or whether, I couldn't believe it, I was in Patna, yes? I used to sleep on the bank of the Ganga with Ram Sevak Swami and all those. I used to sleep on rocks, really hard rocks, and just sleep, looking up at the stars and mosquitoes biting me. And now I go back to Patna after 43 years, 42 years. And this newspaper who invited me, they put me in the suite of a 5-star hotel. I thought I was returning home, you know? And I couldn't say no because, you know, we got there, we had to immediately, yes, Shubhavilas? We got late, we drove, it was a 5-hour drive from Gaya, and we had a press conference immediately after. So I just had like a few minutes to take a bath and run down and do this press conference and then this big program. So I didn't have time to say, no, I'm not. I didn't know where I was going. It really doesn't matter whether we're sleeping under a tree or whether we're, and I'll tell you, I was so much happier in this little room with cow dung here at Radha Gopinath Temple. There's no sense gratification for any of us in these places. It's, in fact, it was freezing cold. Freezing cold. And the room, it was 3 rooms. And they were all gigantic. And they gave a little space heater, which did nothing. So I was thinking, these lucky brahmacharis are in tiny little rooms that could be warm. I'm in this like queen suite, you know, freezing to death, you know. You know, I look at the walls. But whatever the situation may be, we're not concerned with our happiness or distress or our honor or dishonor. We're concerned with how we can serve. And we're enthusiastic. And all of you are enthusiastic and actually developing so many projects that are so pleasing to Prabhupada. My hope and my prayer is we can keep encouraging deeper and higher levels of enthusiasm to do more and more. Sometimes the old devotees here like to talk about the old days when it was really simple and it was really intimate and it was quite austere and it was a lot of different kinds of difficulties. But in every situation, Krishna will make it difficult. Because now, it's really the same. Instead of like four devotees in the ashram, we have like hundreds. And instead of like a couple dozen in the congregation, we have thousands. And instead of one little room, we have, you know, all these properties. But still, there's challenges. With every situation, there's a challenge. And those challenges are beautiful if we just remain, if we just understand, all I have to do is just remain enthusiastic to please Srila Prabhupada, to please the representatives of Srila Prabhupada, to be united together, to serve Krishna in this way. Then there's no difference in time or place. It's transcendental. And especially during this month of December, so many of you here have really put your life, your soul, your everything into going out and giving these precious books to the world. The same books that you're giving out is what was printed in that press in Brahmananda's basement. That people were going to prison, being tortured, and being murdered to distribute. That Prabhupada would cry when he would see how his devotees were so enthusiastic and united to distribute these books. What a blessing that we have, all of us, that we could be a part of that. And not a small part. Because over 100,000 books between the Brahmachari Ashram and the congregation is incredible. It's wonderful. It's not the number. It's the enthusiasm that created that number. It's the commitment and dedication and sacrifice that created that number. So with all my heart of hearts, I thank you. It's a glorious service. It's a glorious service you have done this month. And not only that, whatever efforts you've put in cooperation with each other for this book distribution marathon, it will forever be a glorious blessing in your eternal spiritual account. Prabhupada's blessings are upon you. And I am deeply grateful to see that. And when I saw all of you laughing and having such a nice experience together, that was so sweet. When you were talking, I was getting translations, but I couldn't understand what he was saying. But everybody else was happy. So at first I was a little upset. I want to understand what it is. But it wasn't my karma. Do you speak his language? Maybe you don't understand it so well. He'd have to keep running away to find out what he said. But anyway, at first I was thinking, do you want to hear this? At first I was thinking, I want to hear, everybody's having such a nice experience, and I want to hear, because before, you know, I just came back from Mahaprabhu's house. Mahaprabhu, whose wife, Palika Devi, one of our senior, most incredibly dedicated, pure-hearted Vaishnavis, passed away a few days ago. And when I came back, I was, you know, just that energy of that mood is, I was exhausted. So before coming in here, I was trying to take a little rest. And about every 6 seconds, there was an uproar of laughter. I would go, and then, and I was, and half of my mind was thinking, I want to just go in there and enjoy what they're enjoying. They're laughing so hard, and they're really, it's like monsoon storms of laughter. But at the same time, I'm tired. So anyways, I didn't rest, but I came here and I was really expecting to be a part of it, to understand what you, I was feeling separation. And then when I finally came, I could hardly understand anything. But then Krishna gave me a little gift, which is so precious. If only I can appreciate it. Didn't matter if I understood. The real thing is all of you are enjoying it. And what are you enjoying? From what I was saying, what you were enjoying, what you were so happy about, so blissful about, what you were laughing and howling about, was your appreciation for each other. Yes? That's what I was saying. I couldn't understand the details of the language or what was going on, but I could feel this. That you're having such a festival and such a wonderful, wonderful time just appreciating each other's efforts in devotional service. This is community. This is bhakti. And I was thinking, I'm not supposed to understand the details. And even when you spoke in English, I couldn't understand. I'm not saying your English is not good. I'm just saying it just wasn't my karma to understand anything. But my heart was just overflooding with happiness just to see how all of you were finding such happiness, such bliss, appreciating each other's efforts in devotional service. And as long as we have that type of relationship, you know, Mathura Mohan Prabhu may not be able to do what Radha Gopinath Prabhu does. But believe me, Radha Gopinath Prabhu cannot do what Mathura Mohan Prabhu can do either. And they appreciate each other. And they find bliss appreciating each other's efforts. Even if you go out and you go out like that little sparrow and you're trying to distribute books and all you could do is distribute a few because it's just the way you are, but you're really trying and really trying and really trying. If you appreciate those who are doing a great amount of book distribution, you get the same benefit as them just by appreciating it. And also, the person who's distributing a huge amount of books, if he can appreciate the sincere surrender and effort of someone who's only able to do a few, then that person is going to make a tremendous, much more advancement by being able to appreciate that unknown one. So this culture of appreciation, this culture of finding happiness in seeing others being empowered, finding happiness in seeing other people blessed, seeing happiness in seeing other people happy in Krishna consciousness. That's the key to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and Srila Prabhupada envisioned. So I want to thank you for your incredible efforts distributing Prabhupada's books. And I want to thank you for being such a united family, appreciating each other. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.